together. It's a couple minutes after 8, and we, would you call the roll, please? I would appreciate it. I'm sorry I didn't give you a warning.
Representative
Seaton. Here.
Representative Buskett.
He's excused.
Representative
Culver. He's here. I'm sure he'll be right back. Okay. Yeah.
Representative
Price
Thompson. Representative
Dianne Bolt.
Here.
Chair Keller.
Here. Okay. First of all, for the record, when we closed out Friday, we said that we'd, I said that hopefully we'd get my HB 30 back on the table for quick action. I'm going to back off on that. We have an amendment before us that has been distributed, and we're going to relook at that. And so and I just wanted to explain the context a little bit. This time of year, as I have said, the intent of the committee is to get as good of a picture as we can on these presentations and then to drill down anything we have a particular interest in later. So we're going to have a presentation from the Alaska Post-Secondary Education Commission. I can never get the acronym quite right. I always get it out of order. But anyway, they're going to be here and give us a presentation. And then we'll maybe ask them to come back at some point if we have further questions, because we're going to ask for the whole presentation. The committee members, if you would, take notes, reference the slide numbers or whatever you got so that we can get all the questions together and kind of just take a coordinated approach. Just for a little bit of housekeeping, on the amendment process in committee, I want to say there has been none on the table. There's nothing. This is no reflection of Representative Culver at all. It's just that in the future, on this particular amendment in this bill, but in the future, be aware that, you know, as time goes on, you know, there'll be a process that'll be hurrying, and don't be surprised if we rule, you know, an amendment out of order that doesn't get to us 24 hours before the committee meeting. Now, realistically, okay, there's going to be times when all of us, including myself, are going to want to make an amendment, and I'm not making that a hard, fast rule. I'm just giving the committee notice that, you know, there may be times when we just say, no, that's out of order, unless, you know, there's a really good case for why it hasn't been brought up in the past. You know, we have to kind of be working that together rationally. But again, that is no reflection on this particular amendment in front of us at all. My intent is, but if we get it 24 hours in advance, we will get it out to all the committee members so that you'll have it, you know, by the time you get to committee, so we don't have to grab these things on the fly. So part of it is, I think, just good for all of us in the committee. So that's what we'll do. Is there any other questions or clarifications that need to be made on the committee process? Okay, so just to give you an idea of where we're going, on Wednesday we're going to have a presentation on the school rating system, the Alaska School Performance Index, and we'll presentation on ESEA, which we all are familiar with. It'll help us to sort that out, and so that's where we're going from here. And then, of course, bills previously heard, if we're ready to act on HB 30, we'll look at that when we get there. Just for the record, Representative Christ Thompson has joined us at 8:07 and 6. And with that, we're going to go right to the commission. Stephanie Butler, I guess, are you presenting, or Diane? Whoever, anyway, come up and we'll let you begin. Identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Good morning. For the record, Stephanie Butler, Director of Operations for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and here today in my role as Project Director for the ANSWERS Project.
My name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education and a member of the Executive Governance Group for the ANSWERS Project.
And with the Chair's permission, please, I'd like to also point out that we have two ANSWERS staff members here today in addition to myself. We have Project Manager Carrie Thomas and ACPE's Quality Assurance Officer Ben Shire, and they're also available to answer questions at any point.
Great.
And begin by thanking you for taking the time to hear this presentation about the Answers Project. I know that you have different levels of experience. I think some of you have actually heard the presentation before, so I'll walk through it at what I hope is a reasonable pace and ask you to redirect me, please, if I'm going too quickly or too slowly.
If I could just, you know, it's for the record, so we want to go slow. You don't have to hurry just because maybe some of us know something. So please take your time and go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Keller. Will do. So the first slide here points out the Answers Project overview and the mission of the project, which is delivering the outcomes information, basically providing return on investment information on the state's education programs, making it easier for policymakers, state leaders, and interested stakeholders to know what's working in terms of state education programs. We started talking about this in Alaska well over a decade ago, and we began working on it quite some period of years before we actually received a grant to move forward. On the next page is a summary of the current project and the grant. ANSWERS is an acronym. It stands for Alaska Navigator, Statewide Workforce and Education-Related Statistics. And unfortunately, it comes with a whole boatload of acronyms. Wanted to make you aware of the key ones. The other one that you'll hear quite a bit is P through 20 W SLEDS, and that is preschool through grade 20 and the workforce statewide longitudinal data system. We currently have a federal grant, $4 million over 3 years. The grant period ends this summer in June 2015. And briefly, it's a collaboration. There were four state organizations that partnered to apply for the grant, the Commission on Post-Secondary Education, the University of Alaska, the Department of Education and Early Development, and the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And the goal of this collaboration was to take existing data, which is currently siloed. It's collected by each of the four partners, but is not linked. So there's no new data being collected. It's taking the data that's existing, resident with each of these four partner organizations, de-identifying it, and linking it in a secure environment so that it can be used efficiently and securely to measure long-term program outcomes. And we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail, but before we do, I wanted to answer a couple questions that we're getting fairly regularly. And the first one is why ACPE? Why is ACPE lead in this project? And briefly, it is, again, a collaboration, and ACPE is acting as the project manager. EED is acting as the fiscal agent, and based on the partners' various capacities and areas of expertise, stepping forward and taking on different roles at different times in the project. Specifically, why ACPE, the first bullet there talks about the Commission's long-term interest in being able to assess the impact of programs. The second bullet there notes that the Commission has a statutory responsibility and authority to coordinate these kinds of activities. What it has lacked has been the data to be able to do so effectively, and this project would provide that that data. Relative to ACPE's mission, the project will allow us to answer some of the basic questions that we as staff receive from the Commission on a very regular basis, such as what's working? How do we know what's working? How do we best deploy limited resources? Second question that we're getting very regularly is why does Alaska need a cross-sector longitudinal database? And it's in order to link this information that we currently have but cannot use because it is in silos. Takes us from, or actually transforms the way we measure programs. Right now, it's very easy to measure programs according to what we put into the programs, how many students go through it, what does the program cost, and the idea here is to transform that measurement so that we can look at the long-term return on investment. What is the long-term impact to the individuals who go through these programs? And I would like to point out a couple of caveats with that. The first is that it will take time to build that data. It is a longitudinal system, so we won't be able to do many of these things immediately out of the gate until we have a number of years of data. And the other caveat that need to be very clear about is Alaska's approach to de-identifying the data. We won't be able to follow individual students. We've been asked, for example, will I be able to look at a program that little Johnny went into in second grade and then look at little Johnny in the workforce and see is he successful? And the answer for Alaska's program is no, because we're not identifying specific students. What we will be able to do is look at, on average, for the students who went through this program down the line in higher education, in career training, in the workforce, are they more successful or differently performing than students who did not go through the program? We'll talk quite a bit about the privacy and security approach. We've taken a very conservative approach to system design and again focused very much on de-identification, which does create some trade-offs relative to being able to provide individual student information. I understand that a number of the states are taking an identified approach and are able to provide things like dashboards to teachers where they can actually key in a student's number and look at that student's information. And again, Alaska is not taking that approach with this data. Teachers already have access to look at their own individual students. Our focus is on being able to look at average outcomes. Project has six phases. The only one that's fully complete is planning and preparation. We're currently working still on completing the infrastructure and the development and focused very heavily on phase four, which is data reporting. And I would note that that's building the data reporting system, not actually doing the reporting. No data has been reported as of yet. And I'd also note that relative to project phase six, sustainability, that's been a key piece throughout the project, and we'll talk a little bit about that at the end of this this presentation. The project is governed by a set of operating principles that the four partner organizations agreed upon as the foundation for all project activities, and we'll walk through them at a high level. The first one is that we're linking the cross-sector data, security being the primary focus, and second only to security is transparency, making sure that all of our stakeholders are aware of how the project works, what the project costs, and what the project is able to offer the state. We are planning a website where it'll be possible to log on and, for example, visit the data dictionary, look and see exactly what data is being reported, look at all of the data requests that have been made, and look at all of the responses that have been provided. Additional operating principles. On the first bullet there, data contributors own their own data in the sense that the data contributors know their data and the system cannot use their data without their guidance and input. And that the value of the data is increased by transforming it into useful information rather than just data elements. And that the ongoing system design is based to be agile, flexible, scalable, so that over time Answers is able to be more and more useful for return on investment analyses. Underneath the operating principles and guided by the operating principles, the partners put a number of parameters into place for the Answers program, the first of which is that data is de-identified and aggregated. And by de-identified, we mean that as data comes into the system, it's stripped of, here's another one of the acronyms, PII, personally identifiable information. Any student or account numbers are pulled off. Student names are pulled off. Dates of birth are pulled off. We are retaining month and year so that we can do analyses by age range. And a street address is pulled off. Any of those things that could be used to identify the student. In the second bullet there, it doesn't replace existing data systems. And one of the questions that we're getting fairly regularly is why can't we use one of the existing data systems to do this rather than build a new data system? And that's a great question. And the challenge is the existing data systems are used for transactional reporting to determine students' eligibility for programs or grades or things that must be identified. So if we were to build out an existing system, it would be an identifiable system. So that's why we're building a completely separate system. A third key parameter is that the system uses subsets of data from the partners, not data dumps, not full sets of data. If the data element that is collected by the partner is not relevant to evaluating an education program outcome, it is not appropriate to be included in answers. There is a multi-agency governance structure, which we'll talk about in just a few slides. And another key is that the system is designed to answer cross-sector queries, not individual queries that could be answered by one of the partners, and outputs based on best practices, so that there is an attention to security both on at the point of the input of data, during the storage of the data, and when the data is used in outputs. Relative to the governance of the Answers program, there's a three-tiered structure. The Executive Governance Board has authority and responsibility for all of Answers activities, and it is composed of the Executive Director of ACPE, the President of the University of Alaska, and the Commissioners of Labor and Education. In turn, each of those four has appointed a project manager or a data steward who's a data expert in their organization, who is guiding the day-to-day activities of Answers development. And those data stewards, project managers, in turn pull from their agencies the various expertise that's needed depending on where we are in the project phase. For example, their legal advisors, their research team, their IT staffs, etc. And another key piece of the governance structure is stakeholder committee and advisors. We've been reaching out on an iterative basis to stakeholders throughout the project, and I've actually put them at the top of the governance structure as well as down there as the last star, because what stakeholders' interests are key to the development of the project. We've heard from stakeholders repeatedly that security is absolutely key. Lots and lots of excitement about the ability to measure not just what goes into a program, but the return on the investment for those students, and lots of appetite for information and frustration that we have the data available but aren't able to use it in this way at this point. And the next slide is just a diagram of the governance structure. The program management office there on that diagram is where Answers staff are housed and where Answers activities occur. Again, relative to governance, the next layer is 10 policy questions, and I believe you have them before you. These were developed in 2009, revised with one additional question in 2012, and they're designed to identify the kinds of information that Answers will be used to provide that is not currently available without linking the data. Key to the policy questions is that they are used to determine what data elements are collected in Answers. If a data element is not relevant to answering one of those questions in that policy question list, then it's not relevant to include in Answers. and the policy questions do require approval of the Executive Governance Board in order to change them. On the next slide, a little bit more detail about the privacy and security protocols and the design considerations. We talked a little bit about data de-identification. As well as being de-identified, data is always encrypted. It is compartmentalized in that it's stored on different databases, which are also on different servers. There is automated system logging and auditing to ensure that folks are attempting to access only those areas of the database that they have permissions to access. There is role-based access to ensure appropriate segregation of duties. And I'd also note that there are HR controls in that staff who would be accessing data are subject to the same kinds of background checks upon hire as are all of our IT staff. And on the next slide is a diagram of the privacy and security protocols. At the top there, you'll note, is the existing data that is resident with each of the four partner agencies. And at the agency, the extract is taken to pull out those elements to go into answers. In the next level, the system one, the information is sent to answers and is split apart so that personally identifiable information goes in one direction, which is a dead end, and then the de-identified data elements go in a different direction. System 2 is where the de-identified data specific elements is stored. At that point, in order to report outcomes, information is aggregated, and System 3 is where the aggregated information is stored, and System 4 is where the public can access information on the web. And relative to that that aggregation, another trade-off that I need to point out, and I suspect you've already seen it just with the recent issuance of the APS outcomes report. If you've been looking at that, you'll find that for small districts and small populations, you have asterisks rather than numbers. And that's part of the best practices of ensuring that when a group is so small that a reasonable person in the community may be able to figure out which students those are, we are not able to report that without aggregating at a larger level. So controls both at the input and the output level. We've been asked a number of questions about how Alaska's program compares to that in other states. There are three primary approaches in other states. There are about 47 states that are working on this right now in various levels of progress. The first approach is identifiable information, so that, as we've said, teachers, for example, can log on and see how an individual specific student is doing. The second is the de-identified data, which is the answers model. And the third, which is a very small number of states, is a federated data system where there's actually a centralized automated process that reaches into each of the data partners' data systems and pulls out the elements needed for a specific data request. We did apply for and received a separate grant to identify and travel to states that had systems similar to what Alaska was looking at building. Those states were Mississippi and Arkansas, and sent a team from each of the partners to visit those states and talk with the system users in those states. And we've had some questions relative to examples of what the data products from those states look like. So here in this slide, we have a link to the Mississippi model. I'd note that both of these are very much kind of Cadillac models. While we'd love to have this level of automation, we don't expect to have it immediately coming out of the gate, again, because we won't have all of the longitudinal data at that point. It'll take years to get it. But with the Mississippi program, a user can pick a population by program participation on the web and drill down and then look at that population down the line in college, in career training, in the workforce, and see how that population compares to
other populations that didn't participate in the program.
Stephanie, if I could interrupt, I'm really sorry, but I want to get the whole picture. But I noticed some have come into the room, and I just want to make it clear we're not getting to HB 30 today. So if that's why you're here, don't let us waste your time. Please proceed.
Thank you.
And there's also a link here to the Arkansas system. The workforce in the second sub-bullet there report is an example of really detailed, useful information for doing return on investment analysis and analysis of outcomes. The Arkansas system is a very large model, 30-some-odd employees, so much much more extensive resources than what is proposed in Alaska. But we did pick them specifically to visit based on their security protocols and their being a leader in security and data de-identification. And just a couple more slides, transitioning to sustainability. The goal is for the Answers Project Management Office, which is the office administering the grant, to transition to a Program Management Office, which will be the long-term Answers Answers program. And we're looking at a three-year incubation period, if you will, at ACPE, funded by the Alaska Student Loan Corporation as part of ACPE's operating budget. That Answers Program Office will continue to report to the Executive Governance Board, which will continue to have responsibility and authority for Answers activities, and all of the governance protocols will continue to exist. On the next slide, annual program costs estimated at approximately $1.2 million. This is a bit of a moving target because we don't know yet, of course, what the demand will be for Answers products, and that will drive the cost. Would point out that the funding model will need to be revisited after the initial three-year operating period. The goal of this three-year period is to demonstrate sufficient value of the Answers products that will be able to attract additional grants or additional sources of funding for the long term. And quite frankly, if Answers is not providing state policymakers and leaders with really useful information for outcomes analysis and for making decisions about where to target limited resources, then it doesn't make sense to fund it long term. So the goal will be to demonstrate that it is a extremely useful tool. And that is the end of the formal presentation. I'd be happy to respond to questions if I may.
Questions from the committee? Yes. Representative Rangel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, there's a couple different issues that you brought up. First of all, you said that the information is de-identified in an aggregate. However,
Representative Rangel, if you would reference the slide so that we can all participate easily in the question. So you're looking at slide
number nine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great idea.
Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. So you said the data is de-identified in an aggregate. You said you're keeping the month and year, but not necessarily the date of birth. One, I want to know what did you agree to in the grant application when you applied for the grant in regards to personal identification? Information, and also I would like to know about the zip code. You have the four-digit identifier and the zip code.
Thank you for the question, Representative Reinbold. Through the chair, the grant agreement, the grant application indicated that Alaska would be following a de-identified model. We didn't have specific information about how that would be fully accomplished. That was one of the
goals of the grant was to identify what was appropriate and to accomplish that de-identification. Relative to zip code, we will not be storing address information in the identifiable database with the student data. Excuse me. Rather, what we'll be doing is using geocoding to identify various areas that the student may be associated with for reporting purposes, such as school district, legislative district, economic district, but not specific zip code information.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, if I could, Representative Rainbow, what we're going to do is you can ask all the questions you want,
okay.
But we're going to handle them, if we can, one question at a time. So I want to see if the rest of the committee has questions that are related to yours. It'll just kind of group it rather than go through your whole list. So
okay.
If that'll help, I think it'll help us get the information on there.
Okay, thank you. So as a follow-up, I'm looking at the purpose of the grant. I have the grant in front of me. And it's on page 3, Roman numeral 3, it says the purpose of the grant. And it says the purpose of the grant under the program was to enable the state education agency to design, develop, implement statewide longitudinal data system to efficiently and accurately manage, analyze, disaggregate, and to use individual student data. So that it says that the individual student data will be used.
Respond.
Thank you, Representative Rainbow, through the chair. Yes, individual student data is in the database, and it is aggregated when it is reported. But to be very clear, individual student data is stored in the database. It is de-identified, but it is at the unit level.
Do you want to follow up on that topic?
Yes. So in regards to, I'd ask you a question about the zip code. Are you going to be using the zip code and the four additional at the end of the zip code? Is that being stored?
Representative Rainbow, no.
I have several more questions. But I don't
okay.
Know.
Is there anything else on the de-identified concept question that has been brought up? Proceed, Representative Rainbow.
Okay, thank you. In regards to slide number 15, why did you choose a centralized with answers?
Through the chair, Representative Rainbow, thank you for the question. The most efficient, chosen because it, after analysis, determined it was the most efficient way to perform the grant goals. A federated system would require reaching into other state databases, which would require changing every time any structure in that other state database changed, so the anticipated maintenance costs were considerably higher. Mm. That was the primary reason.
On that topic, did you have a follow-up or another question? Proceed.
It's actually in regards to a different question. Proceed. Okay. There are several programs that appear to be referred to in the P20 database. One is the P20W, that preschool through 20 in the workforce. One is Answers. The other is Unity. Are you just changing the name of what you're doing, or are these actually separate projects?
Through the chair, Representative Rainbow, thank you for that question. The acronyms are really frustrating with this project. P through 20 W SLEDS is an acronym invented
by the Federal Department of Education and describes all of the various projects at various states. Unity was the original name of the K through 12 database that was established under the state's first longitudinal data system grant in 05-06, I believe it was, to the Department of Education. And ANSWERS is the name that the state has given to this second project, and it is anticipated that ANSWERS will be the name of the ongoing program once the project's over.
I have a follow-up on that one, if I could. Going back to slide 10, you talk about the governance, and I think this, I'm struggling with this, maybe you can explain it, but the governance is actually over ANSWERS. In other words, it's the entity made up of the four mentioned there that govern ANSWERS. And ANSWERS is the program that we're talking about, right? I mean, does this governance overlap or oversee or whatever, and say cover other programs? How does this work? And does it incorporate the products of the original grant that went to K-12 for the student identifiers? I mean, is this the governance body for that now? And help me out, the reason I'm asking the question, I'm trying to figure out the chain of command here. In other words, this governance group answers to the post-secondary commission, right? And on that commission, you have a broad range of representation across the state. And I'm trying to get a feel for just how much they're involved, if they're involved. And just to be real straightforward, I hope I'm not rambling so I lose you here, but to be real straightforward, my real question is, how does the, if there's a input, if there's guidance, if there's feedback from the public, how does it get to this governance board? Is there a process, that kind of thing?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Diane Behrens, I'll weigh in, and then Steph can fill in the gaps where I've misstepped. This is a little bit of an odd duck, the ANSWERS program. It's essentially a facilitated partnership. And in 2011, former Governor Parnell issued an administrative order directing these state agencies to work together to share information to the extent permitted by law, to evaluate the effectiveness of state investment in programs. So we created a governance structure pursuant to that administrative order that through the grant we indicated that the development of the ANSWERS product, the resource or tool, would be under the direction of these four, the executives of these four organizations, and the executives, as part of their operating principles, have agreed to operate on a consensus model. So the development of the ANSWERS system, the protocols that are in place, have all been done jointly under this executive governance model, and it will remain in place. This group does not report to the commission. I do, as executive director of the organization, but they're essentially gathering simply to govern the use of the program itself. With respect to public input, we're currently in a recruitment for a director of the program office. One of the key duties of the director will be to solicit and facilitate input from the various publics, whether those are parents and teachers, whether they are counselors, whether they are educators, administrators, researchers, to ensure that we understand how to best use the data in the system to assist them in doing their jobs or meeting their information needs.
I want to go a follow-up there, and it's partly just to give you a context for my question, but Alaska has, as you know, I mean, just some general things, but Alaska has a clause, a right to privacy clause, and so that makes it really interesting in Alaska, because if I have a constituent who is concerned and wants input on how the data will be used, protected, you know, the things that are that I believe are being very carefully looked at, and they come to the legislator and they say, what's going on here? You know, I want to know what's going on. We are access. That's why I'm asking. You know, how in the world do we forward the concern, the information, that kind of thing to you? And I think what I heard you just say is that that's still future, and because there's going to be a director and a process that's developed for that.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. And just to circle back to something that Stephanie mentioned in her presentation, transparency to the public is very key. All of the data elements that are that will be contained in the system, there that you will be able to go in and get a plain language description of what the data is and what it means. That information will be by the respective data owners, whether that's labor, education, the university, or the commission. So that's going to be available to anyone in the public to see what's in the system. The other thing that will be very public is what requests for research and reports have been made, and which were approved, and then what was the resulting product of that. So we understand the importance to everyone in Alaska of having that information.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that clarification. Back on slides, Dr. Trento, back on slide 7, Stephanie pointed out the principle of transparency and security as being primary. What went through my mind, which will again further explain my question, is that the transparency, Stephanie said, is between the stakeholders. And I haven't seen where the stakeholder of parents and students has been, addressed yet. That's why I asked the question, because if it's, you know, it's easy to read that and think of the stakeholders as the people that want the data to do the, efficient government, because that's the ultimate goal here, to make sure we have accountability on the money, you know. But anyway, thank you for that explanation. That transparency does include the stakeholder of the parents and the teachers and the citizens of Alaska.
Absolutely. And, Mr. Chair, what we've tried to do early in the process when we've gathered input is to identify associations that represent these different stakeholders. So, for instance, when we were in the process of developing the grant, we reached out to the Alaska PTA to indicate whether or not they would support this approach, and the indication was that what they would. Now, understanding that's an organization and not individual parents, we would still be expect to have input from private citizens in this process.
I think Representative Seaton and Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and bypassing my general question and getting down to the security portion that we've been talking about and the data. What is the necessity for answers to retain any individual data? Why don't you get the data from the different databases in already anonymized form, and then we don't have to really worry about the security in the database and of somebody coming in and reaching in and pulling out data? Because as I'm understanding it, you're talking about averages, you're talking about, you're not even following Johnny from year to year to year, you're only looking at Johnny's, he did this in third grade, and then basically he's de-identified, and then he did this in fourth grade, because you're not using this database for following that individual through. So wouldn't we get over most of these questions by just not maintaining identified data in answers at all in the database? Because it sounds like everything you've said, you're not going to use any of those individual identifiers at all.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, thanks for the question. The issue is that with aggregated information, we're able to answer questions about populations in those groups that we've identified now. If we have new questions come up that involve different groups, when we have aggregated information, we can't resort it into different groups because we don't know what individuals make up those populations. So that's why we're keeping the unit level data with the identified information split off. So that certainly is quite a bit of work that could be done with aggregate populations, but it would limit us in terms of being able to answer new questions that we haven't identified at the time that we aggregate the information.
Follow-up or present statement?
So I guess that's my question. I mean, that seems to be the problem, is that you're saying that for right now, you're going to use anonymized data. And you're only going to report it that way, but you want to keep individually identified data so that you can follow individuals throughout changes, which is what, like, the K-12 does. It maintains within their database for following those individuals. But my understanding was you're talking about reporting average data and, you know, aggregated data, and if it's a smaller population, not identifying that population at all, because then it wouldn't be aggregated enough. So I guess I would like to see some of the kinds of questions that you would anticipate that answers would be able to provide, requiring future knowledge of carrying those individuals through your database. I mean, you're going to get reported socioeconomic structure, you're going to get all of those things, but they're not individual identifiers. So I guess I'm not figuring out why we have the security concerns so broadly if we don't carry those individual identifiers.
If I could just weigh in here a bit, through the chair, Representative Seaton. One of the points of having an ability to use that identifiable information that is retained outside of answers, it will allow you to check, so, you know, what was someone's attachment to the labor in these various groups, for individuals who are in these various groups, what was their attachment to the workforce 1 year after? What was their attachment to the workforce 5 years after? As that data is added, those data sets are added in the longitudinal data system, you have to be able to identify that unit record so that you know at these different points in time just what was the path that they were on. So it really is to be able to identify outcomes over time rather than at a single point in time.
Thank you. Representative Rimbaud?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first of all, I'm going to quote from the Constitution, Article 1, Section 22, says right of privacy. The right of the people to privacy is recognized and shall not be infringed. The legislature shall implement this section. So, first of all, we all swore to uphold and defend the Constitution, so I fundamentally disagree with this program. I'm just going to get that out on the record. Absolutely disagree with it, and I'm very, very concerned about it. I also am very disappointed with Administrative Order 261 from Governor Parnell that directed all y'all to work together in regards to this. I need to know a lot of different information because on the grant application, it specifically says here that you're going to create these, develop and implement statewide longitudinal data systems to efficiently and accurately manage, analyze, and use individual data. So I think that's really important that people know that. Every single person that I talk, you know, I've had concern, Diane, about this program for 2 years. You know, I had your years, and I was absolutely not going to have any part of funding this. But what I'm really, really concerned about is in OASIS. My understanding that in OASIS they may use the ZIP plus 4, which gets right down to the household number. And I need you to explain to me, it says in the Senate Education Subcommittee, you said there's no way to opt out. Like, there's no way that an individual that wants to opt out of that. First of all, I want you to verify that is that true, that no one can opt out. And second, I want to know the interoperability between different agencies, such as OASIS, that the schools are using. So if you could answer those two questions, that would be great.
Just a clarification, Representative Reinbold, just to make sure we miss it. The first one was whether there is yes or no, whether there is an opt-out process for answers, and the second one was?
The second one is the interoperability between the different agencies, such as the online, the OASIS program, that they're being entered up at the school level, how the different agencies are working with the different data.
Good.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, specific to the question on the interoperability, the data that the Department of Education is providing to answers does come from OASIS. It is a subset of that OASIS data. And then specific to the opt-out question, students are not able to opt out of the information that is collected by the four partner agencies. All of that is required. And the way Answers is structured would not provide for an opt-out, because the information that goes from those agencies into Answers is de-identified, so we don't know which specific students. In order to implement an opt-out, we would need to change the structure so that it's identified information.
If I could ask a quick follow-up, and then Representative Seaton, and that is based on the state law that says that the district, right, is required to not give a diploma unless the testing is done. I mean, what is the basis for the no opt-out? Help me. Is that the law?
Representative Kell, thank you for the question. Relative to the data that's collected by partners that students cannot opt out from, my understanding is that there are various laws that apply that require that data be collected. I don't have expertise in that area and would be reluctant to answer you and be incorrect.
I would be delighted to get a response on that one, a specific one. You know, by what authority can we say that you cannot opt out, you know, in the state law and the federal law? And that goes to the heart, and this is again for context, but that goes to the heart of a question I have that I'm struggling with. I'm not going to ask right now, but just to help understand, is the federal money that goes out for a grant has a purpose, and it seems like this is the purpose of the legislature, for example, may have been a little slow in the process, and I just would like to know how it fits. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, and I wanted to follow up on the answer about opting out, because you said that you couldn't opt out because the information that comes from OASIS or others are de-identified. Well, if you've de-identified the data, then you wouldn't be maintaining the individual identifiers in answers. So I'm hearing two different things there. Could you explain that to me?
Through the chair, yes, thank you, Representative Seaton. As the information comes into answers, all of the identifying information is split off through an automated process and goes into a separate database where it is used only for linking and is not available to answers staff for any evaluation. So if we were to build some kind of opt-out process, we would need for answers staff to be able to have access to that identified information so that we can indeed exclude students who opted out.
It'll take a little longer for me to interpret, so that's fine. I don't mean to go too far in the weeds here. I just don't quite understand. I'm trying to understand that, and so we have answers is going to have two databases, as I'm understanding it. One database is the full database of everything that comes in, and then you're doing a sub database that is de-identified, which you will generally work with, but you'll have the full database, so if additional questions come in, you can go back and pull those future answers and link the student data all the way through to answer those future questions? And I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, this is Diane Behrens. The matching system, which is where we'll be able to match the student to future records, all that's contained in there are the elements needed to match them. It's not a full set of the data. What happens is that identifier information is stripped off. That alone will sit in this separate system that should not be accessible by staff. So in that process, a random identifier that has nothing to do with a school ID, a social security number, any of these other elements, is assigned to that unit record. So that, with the data elements upon which research will be based, is put into the answers system, and that is the data that we will use to produce these program level reports. So there isn't a full database and a de-identified database.
You kind of follow up on, and so the identifier number that is going to be accessible to staff is going to be to that particular data that came in for, let's say, that third grade reading score or third grade scores, but that's not going to be tied to also the fourth grade scores, or it's a single number, or is there a single randomly generated number for each basically piece of data that comes in, or is there just a new student number that is assigned that you can go back and in the linking data, but that same student identifier number will be carried through all data that comes in from all systems for that individual?
Go ahead. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the latter is correct. We'll be assigning a random ID to the first piece of data that comes in and stripping off the identifiable information, and then when a new piece of data comes in, seeing is it for the same student. If so, that new piece of data will be appended to that random ID so that all of the data for one student are linked together over, I realize my start talking with my hands here, are linked together over time, but without any name or any way for us to say, oh, that's that particular student that we know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Just for the context, I want to explain to the committee and just put this on the record. You're not here because, I mean, maybe don't feel uncomfortable. We want to understand. I know you want us to understand. We're in no hurry, okay? So the questions that we're asking, we can come back to. I'm at this point, this may be preliminary, but I'm anticipating another presentation with the experts at can tell us why there can be no opt-out on this program. I mean, I'm interested in that particular one and going further with it. But we're not going to get to the answer, all the details today, for sure. So it's just interaction. I welcome all your questions. Representative Reinbold.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. First of all, do superintendents, one of them kind of had a deer in headlight the other day, do superintendents understand this database and understand what's going on? And also, do you have parents' permission to be collecting all this data?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, thank you. We've done a number of presentations for superintendents at superintendents' meetings and one-on-one presentations, and we're doing everything that we can to ensure that superintendents fully understand what the data is and how it's used and the entire project. And I
have a follow-up in that response. I didn't mean to interrupt, though. Please finish.
And I must apologize, I've lost the second part of the question.
Do parents, have you gotten their permission to collect all of this data and store it in this massive database?
Representative Reinbold, there is not a mechanism for parents to give permission or opt into the system.
And
Mr. Chair, I would just add, and we are not a collecting agency. We're simply linking the data.
Okay. I think this might help. when you ask Representative Reinbold if the superintendents understand, you know, if I could take my resume and I could say, okay, I'm a education pro here, and you know, but that doesn't work. This is a concept that is evolving. You know, I was involved in early stages of the data quality initiative, and my motivation at that point was I really wanted teachers, and I was thinking of my local teachers and my kids and my grandkids, right, to be able to use technology to help them in their lesson plans to help the student learn. You know, I wasn't thinking in terms of the linking of the data, you know, with so many. I was thinking about the parent, teachers, the local school board having access to real information, all the details, and maybe the legislature and the State Department having the unidentified, you know, track. That's the context I went into it. And I was pretty motivated. I thought it was a great idea because I saw technology as a way to save a lot of money in the way we teach, you know. Well, and I'm saying that because, you know, it has changed, obviously, over time, and I assume that change is hard to keep up with, and I would be very surprised if every superintendent had a full understanding of what this was, just like I don't think we do, and that's the purpose of this meeting. So that's where we're going. Diane.
Mr. Chair, I would just add that one of the proof of concept reports that we've done has been a district feedback report. And so what we did was we looked at post-secondary outcomes for students who graduated from each of the districts in the state, and we sent a report on those outcomes back to each district superintendent. So to the extent that we've reached out in association meetings, we've actually produced a report that demonstrates what you can do by cross-sector linking, and sent that under secure transmittal to the district superintendents. Our hope is that there will be some awareness of that. Following that district feedback report, we reached out to district superintendents and asked them, was that information in fact helpful? What other information might they be interested in seeing through cross-sector linking? And there were several who expressed an interest in providing feedback to improve that report in future. So that's the sort of iterative process that we would hope to have in place to make this resource most useful.
I think, Representative Reinbold, Representative Seaton, and Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, you mentioned something about Social Security numbers. Where are you getting the Social Security numbers? Is this linked back to the permanent fund dividend in any way? That's question number one. And two, is there a clearinghouse where this data can be used across state lines?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, there are two sources of Social Security numbers. One is for those who are in the labor force. There is a Social Security number that can be used as part of the matching process. And the permanent fund database is the other source of a Social Security number to be used specifically for the matching process. And your second question?
Is there a clearinghouse where this data can be used across state lines?
There is not, Representative Reinbold. The only cross-sector or cross-state initiative that I'm aware of is one that involves several states. It's in the early stages. We are not a participant in that project, and I believe the states are Washington, Oregon, Hawaii, and perhaps Idaho. Yeah. Idaho, yes. We are not a partner to that.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'm very much in favor of having results for the basis for decision-making. I mean, that's a goal. I think that's the goal you're after. That's the goal we're after. But looking at the overview, you know, we're talking P20, and I'm trying to figure out if we aggregate pre-kindergarten education. Can you give us kind of an example of how we're doing that, and are we only using public pre-kindergarten education? So if we're looking at pre-kindergarten data, it's going to say, well, if you went to pre-kindergarten that was public in the school, this is it, and we're comparing you with people that we don't know whether they went to pre-kindergarten, whether they didn't, but how aggregated is that data? And that's my kind of first question. And the second one is on average. So we get the information that on the average, if you do well in third grade reading, you have 32% chance of going on to college. And I guess, are we looking at standard deviations? Are we looking at, you know, the variance between, to create that average? I'm not sure how that report, if we're just talking about an average, is going to, the average could be the same if you have a very wide distribution or very narrow distribution. So I'm trying to figure out how the average reporting for this is going to be helpful for decision making.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, thank you. Relative to pre-K, Alaska has very limited pre-K information. We have some Head Start information, and that's the extent of it. The grants had three specific areas of focus. One of those areas was collecting and bringing in pre-K information. Alaska did not apply for that priority area, if you will. Our focus has been on linking the existing data with post-secondary and workforce data. So the information that will be available relative to pre-K really is very small in Alaska. Relative to the second question, goal will be to look at these average populations and look at differences. We expect that out of the gate with the limited information until we have long-term outcomes, that the statistics that we'll be offering are primarily descriptive rather than inferential. But over time, we would anticipate the ability to do things like regression analyses where we're able to say a student is most likely to have a successful career in Alaska if they've participated in or scored at or something, this and this. But again, that's something that will take years to build up that level of data to have be able to do with any statistical accuracy that kind of inferential analysis. But yes, that would be a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If your students attend private school or are homeschooled, they're not in this database. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, if they are reported to the Department of Education and Early Development, they are in the database. So some students who are privately schooled, homeschooled, will be. Others will not. It depends on whether or not they're reported to the K-12 system.
Mr. Chair, if I could, the homeschools that are managed through school districts, I can understand how they would, but are there homeschooled students and private school students that voluntarily are reported to the State Department of Education?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, there are students who are homeschooled who don't touch the state's education system, and those would not be in the database.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I didn't hear the entire answer. You said that there are private schools and homeschoolers that report to the state. How does a private school get to report to the state? Do they just choose to report to the state and the state says, okay, we like your data, so we'll accept it, or we would love to have access to your data and therefore some accountability on how our various schools are doing?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Drummond, for that clarification. If the private school or the home school reports the students to the state for some reason, which is normally they're receiving some kind of public funds, then they will indeed be in the database. A good example would be students who are reported from private schools as being APS eligible and using APS funds. Those students who are, for example, homeschooled
and do not participate in a program through a district or through the state would not be in the database.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up?
What, you'll have to tell me what APS, remind me what APS is.
I'm sorry, we have such right. acronym speak. Thank you for asking that. It's the Alaska Performance Scholarship.
Okay. And one more question. And did I hear you correctly that you chose not to collect the data for any preschool information that exists for any of our students because there's such limited availability of preschool, of public preschool?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, we are collecting that information that is reported to the Department of Education and Early Development, but what is reported to them is very limited. So what we'll be able to do with that information is actually quite limited.
Okay, thank you. Other than compare us to other states that actually are providing preschool, like Arkansas, which you said on slide 17, the ongoing evaluation of the pre-K program. Since we don't have much of a pre-K program, we can't evaluate it. So, okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would like to say that I'm anticipating asking, I've already asked on the record, but having the committee ask me the question on explaining why answers, you can say that there's no opt-out, and I would like that if you would expand and clarify when you get the Department of Law feedback that very question, because it's my understanding that a parent can opt to not take any state money and teach their own children and be completely within their rights to do so in the state of Alaska. And I want that clarified on the record that is, in fact, the case in Alaska. Representative Culver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to follow up on Representative Reinbold's question about Social Security numbers. Our Social Security numbers, you track the data. Is that primarily how you track this? Follow the student is through the student's Social Security number.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, we use a number of different identifiers for linking purposes. One of which is the Social Security number. The challenge is that the only identifying information on a Department of Labor record is the Social Security number.
Okay. What process would we create either regulatorily or statutorily to allow parents and families to opt out? My concern is, I think over the last year we've had a number of data breaches, whether it's Target, whether it's somebody misplaces a laptop from the Department of Defense. If a children's Social Security number gets in the wrong hands, the rest of their future credit history life could be very difficult. Even medical records, they typically are not doing much with Social Security numbers anymore. Insurance companies used to use it. I'm just concerned that there's a opportunity or a risk of compromising personal data, and if we can get around analyzing data without using the Social Security number, I think it'd be a great privacy practice on behalf of the Department of Education to go there. So is there an opt-out, and is it going to take a statute or regulation to accomplish that?
You can respond now, or again, you can make that part of the further clarification.
Thank you, Representative Keller. And there is not currently an opt-out, but we'll certainly include that in the follow-up information.
And for clarification, that's an opt-out for use of the Social Security number. Yeah, okay. For the use of the Social Security. Representative Reinbold. But just before you ask, Representative Reinbold has informed me that she has, quote, lots of questions. So, and that's fine. That's what we're here for. That's what we're going to, and I'm not going to speed this up. In other words, we're going to run out of time. So I would ask that you will work with my staff, Janet. At the end we'll talk about the need for extending this and when, so it fits your needs too. Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I truly believe it should be an opt-in, not an opt-out program. I think everyone needs full disclosure, full transparency. I'm just amazed at this whole situation that I've tried to be shining light on this for a couple of years now. But I want to go down back and first of all, Representative Colbert, this whole Social Security number and getting hands, you know, the information in the wrong hands and things like that. I need to know more about the interoperability. I want to know exactly, you know, the flow, the clearinghouse. Apparently, according to FAFSA, you want to track kids across state lines. So we need to know how that information. One, I see you're shaking your hands and saying no. There's nothing across state lines. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, you may be referring to the student clearinghouse, the National Student Clearinghouse. That yes, the National Student Clearinghouse exists. We're not going to be interoperable with them. We will download data on where Alaskan students have gone to college elsewhere. That's something we currently get state reports that tell us where, for instance, in the APS, the Alaska Performance Scholarship Outcomes Report, we use National Student Clearinghouse data to identify for those Alaskan students who go to post-secondary education outside of Alaska where they're going and to what extent there is an out-migration. So if that's what you're referring to, I'm not aware of any relationship between the FAFSA, which is the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, and the National Student Clearinghouse. So that's the first I've heard of that notion.
The question being is just the transfer of data across state lines. And if you end up having information that is across state lines, how can we be sure that if it's in the hands of another agency, how that data is going to be protected? But I'm gonna move on to the Unlocking the Power of Education data for all Americans. This is the Office of Science and Technology Policy from the President of January 19th, 2012. And it goes into great, great details in regards to the federal government and their involvement with this type of data. There's something called education.data.gov. So I think people need to look up that if they're interested. Also, there's a My Data button, which they're able to download different information. Also, there's the DODEA, and what I find was really, really amazing about this document, it really gets into the Houghton Mifflin, it gets Pearson is involved in this, and basically it says that they can download My Data button, and Pearson is using something called PowerSchool. Can you explain what PowerSchool is? Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
You're not familiar with PowerSchool. Okay. Basically, it says that they can download the child's record of learning through PowerSchool student information system. It's a port, and like I said, it's interlinked, and then it says the data locker commitment. Microsoft commits to creating a cloud-based platform for lifelong learning record, LLR. And it interfaces with the API. And I mean, I know this is getting into
APIs again.
The API. You're familiar with API, right?
No. In fact, through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the PowerSchool has no relevancy to the project that we're describing today. Okay. So I guess I have no expertise in that area. I've heard the term. It is a data management system that's usually school-based or district-based, mm-hmm. But that's the extent of it.
Okay, if you're not an expert in that, Mr. Chairman, we'll skip that. But I do want to talk to you about your interactions with the federal government. Can you explain with your grant what any requirements, because there's a special requirements in here in part of this grant, can you explain to any interaction you have with the federal government in regards to this database?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, this database is not designed to interact with the federal government at all. It was the express reason for the grant was to allow the state of Alaska to develop a means by which we ourselves could analyze the outcomes of our education and training programs. That was it. I'd like to also categorically state that there is no intent, nor is there a design, for us to share data out across state lines. This is, again, to be used in Alaska for Alaskans to understand how effective and efficient our programs are that are designed to train Alaskans for the workforce and to have to be successful in our community.
A follow-up on that, Diane, would it be appropriate for legislative involvement to ensure that that is the case? I mean, the fact that there's no intent now, I mean, what do you think? I mean, that's a sure area we can explore and go into, but do you have any thoughts on that? Or?
Certainly, Representative Keller, I think the statutory prohibition against sharing this data out to from the answer system to the federal government is perfectly reasonable.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions on Representative Reinbold?
Okay, well, I just wanted to point out that in this grant, it's of the special requirements, and it said that applicants need to budget travel to go to Washington, D.C. to determine the quality of the data. So the federal government, this is all federally funded. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, it is correct.
So
if I could just speak to that, there is concern on the part of the federal government for, I mean, this is a federally funded project. The data quality campaign is essentially a campaign that is designed at its simplest terms to ensure that the data can be comparable state to state so that in analyzing how Alaska students are doing, you can look to what is the national average, what is the performance of students in other states. And so even though very different designs have been in place to develop these states' longitudinal data system, one of the goals would be to allow comparability across state lines, not sharing of data across state lines, but so that a state that is measuring its own performance can look to the performance measurements of other states and say, how do we compare?
Representative Reinbold?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was set into place, I believe, with Senate Bill 221 in regards to Alaska Performance Scholarship. Can you go back and just, do you recall that, anything about the Senate Bill 221, the Performance Scholarship, the databases, anything in regards to that?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the only relevance that the Alaska Performance Scholarship statutes have to this is that the legislature has required that annually we will report on the outcomes of the performance scholarship. The three agencies that are expected to participate in that analysis are, the four actually, it would be the University of Alaska, Department of Labor, Department of Education, and the Commission.
Follow up. Okay, so when we applied for the No Child Left Behind waiver, the NOTA for education, it was required that we do this P20 database.
I couldn't speak to that, Representative Reinbold. I'm not sure what specifically was in the waiver request for No Child Left Behind. Not involved with that.
If you would, Representative Reinbold, write that question down, and we can get it to the department and ask for their feedback. And that may be something else we need to look at, is the waiver in more detail. But if you would, just capture that with my staff. So.
Absolutely. Fantastic. I will. I'm very familiar with the No Child Left Behind. And it is a requirement. The P20 database is a requirement for the No Child Left Behind waiver. But if that's not something that you're an expert at, well, I'm going to move back to your grant application. And the grant application says that they're going to be determining the quality of the data. So can you tell me, do you know anything about an organization by the name of McKinsey and Company? Do you know anything about them?
Through the chair, no.
No, you're not. You're not familiar with with any interface with McKinsey.
None.
Okay. Because McKinsey and Company is very, very involved with the P20 data all the way to the ACT, SAT. But you're not familiar with them at all. Do you have any idea of the complete total package of costs of this database? It says it's only going to be $1 million roughly to maintain it. Is that what you're asking for right now? Do you know the complete total costs of the data?
Through the chair, we're estimating the cost of running the program management to be about $1 million a year.
Any other questions on the cost or follow up on that? Okay. Do you have another question, Representative Reinwald, or is there a follow-up on cost?
I will forfeit at this time. I have other questions, but not relating to the cost.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
And, Mr. Chair, we're off of cost right now?
No.
Or we're still on?
We're still on cost, but if you have no, but she, if there's, I don't see any other questions, so if you have something else, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do have a more basic question, I guess. You know, if we're looking at sometime in the future years, it would be nice to do regression analysis to be able to tell us how kids in 10th grade, if they passed, beginning math or they didn't, and how that worked in the workforce or make those correlations. I guess I'm looking at the policy questions that are the accompanying thing, because I'm very interested in having results that could help us make decisions. And I'm not seeing on these set of policies really very much, these policy questions, very much that's going to enable us to make any decisions, especially with small databases or small numbers across, accumulating that over multiple years and conditions in Alaska. So I guess what I would like to do is have more relevant questions that we think we will be able to answer through answers in some kind of reasonable point in time that would be relevant to legislative action. It may be that other people want to use these data for other purposes, and that's fine. I'm just trying to figure out from my standpoint what kinds of questions and in what kind of time frame would we expect to be able to give meaningful results to aid in our decision making. I know that's a long question. Sorry it's not more concise, Mr. Chairman, but hopefully that's understandable.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Seaton. The policy questions are designed to be a high-level framework under which research questions of the type you're describing would absolutely be developed. And I'd be happy to put together a list of sample research questions and associated timelines and return that to
that'd be helpful. Mr. Chairman, that would be very helpful for me to understanding the value of this and, why we should support it. So thank you very much.
Yeah. And thank you for volunteering to do that. If you get it to Janet, she'll distribute it to the committee. Other questions? Representative Reinbold?
Okay.
You don't, if, because we're coming back, we can extend. We don't, you don't have to ask all your questions that you have, but if you want to, go right ahead.
Okay, well, the two things in the future I'd like to go over for sure, and I think it's better if I distribute this information, but the governance team, I want to talk about the governance team, and I also want to talk about any interaction you have with the Institute for Education Sciences at the U.S. Department of Education. Do you have any interactions with the Institute for Education Sciences at the U.S. Department of Education?
For clarification, Representative Reinbold, the governance team of what? Of the answer Is that what you mean?
Yeah, she's familiar with the governance team.
Okay. Go ahead and respond. Sorry, I jumped in. I just wanted to understand the question.
And through the chair, Representative Reinbold, to your question on IES, the Institute for Educational Statistics is the body of the United States Department of Education that is managing the grant program. Mm-hmm.
So can you speak today in regards to your interaction that you have with them, and also talk about the governance team?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, relative to Department of Education and IES specifically, we do meet with them monthly to report progress on the grant project. And as you noted, we are required to travel to Washington, D.C. to attend their best practices conference annually.
And through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I'm not sure what discussion you would like about the governance team.
Can you just explain it to the body through the chair?
Certainly. The members of the executive governance team are the university, the commissioners of labor and commerce, and the executive director of the commission as the entity or the individuals responsible ultimately for the data that is being contributed to the ANSWERS project. This team, guided by stewards in each of, and stewards are basically those are their subject matter experts on the data from within their organizations. They will advise on the appropriateness of research requests. They will review the results of research requests before they're approved for public dissemination. They essentially guide the work of the program office. The ANSWERS director will report administratively to the executive director of the commission, since that's where the program is housed, but will actually report to the four-member executive governance board.
Now I need a clarification. I'm being dense. We're talking about the governance team on slide 10 that we've already talked about?
Correct.
Okay. And I understood your question to be something about a federal governance team. Am I wrong?
It was two different questions that I asked. I was talking about that governance team, but I was also asking, which they answered, that they meet every month with the federal government to talk to them about the grant. But I do have a question in regards to this governance document, Mr. Chairman, if you allow me.
Proceed.
Okay, so in your governance document, you indicate that metadata from external sources will be added by private vendors. What will be added to the databases, and how will Alaskans know that the data from external sources has been added to the data?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I believe what you're talking about, and I'm not positive, so please redirect me if I'm not responding to the question, is the descriptive data to the actual data elements. So the contractor that is building the infrastructure for us is building placeholders so that we can fill in descriptions in plain English of what the data elements are, and that's the metadata that we expect to include in ANSWERS.
Follow-up?
Thank you. So, one, who is the contractor building the data? That is one question.
To the chair, Representative Reinbold, GeoNorth.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Okay. Also, do you know anything about the Master Pearson Index? Do you know anything about indexing or the data?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, no.
Thank you.
Follow-up, is GeoNorth the Alaska-based company?
Representative Keller, yes, that was one of our goals, was to use Alaska-based companies rather than buy something national off the shelf.
Okay, thanks. Looks like the committee is winding down, unless you had another.
Well, I'll, Mr. Chairman, if I can just ask one final question. I'll have plenty more next time around. But what makes you feel that you have the right to all this data and data mine on these children, these itty-bitty kiddos all the way through? I'm just curious,
What makes you feel like this is something that you need to be doing? I mean,
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the particular interest on the part of the commission is to assess the effectiveness of our own programs. To the extent that school districts might have an interest in knowing how well they're preparing students for the workforce and for a successful life after leaving the educational system, we would hope that there is an interest out there in doing that and that they'll be a supporter of the system as a result. Similarly, the leadership at the University of Alaska is very concerned about what the return on investment the state is getting as well as individual students. So to the extent to which analyzing the outcomes of the program can inform improvements to the program, that would be something that our society as a whole, I would think, would be interested in.
And if I could just add a comment there is that as a legislature, we have a vested interest in making sure we're getting a return on our investment in education. And so I'm sure that it was driven, this whole process and the evolution, I will call it, has been driven by the insistence of our various legislators to know what's going on. And so,
Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that, I mean, you know, we talk about return on investment when actually the most important recipient of an improved educational system are the children that come next. So to the extent that we can identify deficiencies in our system to the benefit of those individual Alaskans, I see that as part of our responsibility.
Right. I think it's interesting, on slide 3, you identified AS 1442030 as the authorizing authority for answers, I guess, or ACPE. And so there's a lot more to it than that, because that's a pretty broad, so maybe you want to share that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you know, this is a broad authority, and it's something that, you know, I've been interacting, well, with you for probably 15 years during your contact with the legislature, but for over 20 years I've been interacting with the folks in the legislature, and year after year I hear questions that we simply cannot answer, and I hear frustration in the voice of legislators when we cannot answer these questions. So that was certainly part of the impetus for this partnership to form.
For what it's worth, if I was sitting in your place, I would have gone probably the same direction. Representative Reinbold.
Okay, thank you. And I believe it's the parents and the students that need to be following. I don't think it's the government's position to be tracking all this data. I would argue this is not going to be a rate of return on investment, but a complete waste of money in the long term. For example, that over $20 million, I think it was $25 million or something, that the state troopers just set up this massive database that just was a complete and total failure. And that's recent history. But I absolutely, fundamentally think that if we focus on excellence in education, resources in the classroom, empowering the parents, rather than tracking, data mining, social engineering, and all that, I think this is absolutely, completely the wrong direction, and I'm highly concerned about the costs, the focus here on the data rather than creating excellence in education. But that's my opinion in regards to this, and we'll see. I'm highly concerned about the Constitution. I think this is a complete goes against our Constitution, where we as a legislature, it's our responsibility to protect the privacy of our individual constituents, and this is completely polar opposite of that. So
I just want to respond to that if I could, Representative Reinbold. The challenge is where we go from here, what we do to improve and build the appropriate sideboards. And I just want to point out again that this is the questions that are before us today, there's no bad people here and good people. There's no, conspiracy. At least I don't believe there is. It's all changing around us. When I go to Fred Meyer, I use my card that gives me a discount on my gas, and I'm very delighted with that. And it's based on this collection of information. It is rampant in our society, you know. And so, frankly, If we could say you aren't going to do this, you know, from the, we're going to just stop this whole project, I don't think there's the, I don't think that there's enough. I don't think we want to do that. You know, I mean, as a culture, I mean, in general, very general terms. I mean, I don't think that there's a desire there to just cease and desist on this problem with all that out there. Again, I think it's very valuable for us to look for where we can go from here, how we can protect the privacy of Alaskans and see, you know, what's going on. And, you know, I think it's a very appropriate question to ask the Department of Law, you know, or whoever the experts are, to explain how we got into a spot where, you know, that we can say our students and parents don't have the option to opt out. I want to understand that, you know. And the reason I'm bringing that up again is I want the committee to, if you also have the question, or if you want to add to that question, give it on the record now so that we can get a response that is, you know, efficient as we can, efficiently as we can. Representative Drummond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your perspective and overview. Every time we turn around, we're talking about accountability in this organization at every level, and I appreciate what this long-term project is going to provide us. I wish that, and you mentioned early on that the four organizations that are providing the major amount of data here have previously, that information has been siloed, and this is bringing it together. I also serve on the Budget Subcommittee for Corrections, and we just reviewed their a review of their program, and I wish they had access to this data. And in a, I forget if the word, if it's regression analysis, but looking at how these 5,000 or 6,000 people that are in our prison system that are costing us way more money than our students cost on a daily basis, how did they get there? What were they lacking in their educational preparation that led them to become the most costly factor in our public services? If there was a way for corrections to take advantage of this data, I surely would support that. Thank you.
I want to clarify one thing, because I did not mean to, in my statement, say that I endorse where we're at in this process. I don't, you know, necessarily. But what I was bringing is that stopping completely and what we've been doing may not be an option because we don't have the political will to get there, okay? So to me, the interest that I have is learning how we can regulate, that's what I meant by sideboards, what we're doing to protect the privacy appropriately of our citizens. So I just wanted to say that again because I think that I may have said it in a way where I indicated that I really approve of the collecting of the data. And I'm certainly not in a position to say that. You know, I'm kind of hold the reserve and go there right now. But I'm just saying, let's look at this closely and see if what the appropriate next step is. If it turns out that that is to stop the whole collection of data completely, we'll have to see if we can get there and work on that. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that I just want to reiterate that we're not talking about the collection of data. The collectors of the data are those databases in the secondary schools, in the workforce, in the university. This is an amalgamation linking and analyzing the data that is already collected. So in that respect, I'm not worried about somebody opting out because, you know, those are other databases. What I'm somewhat worried about is making sure that we have a secure way of handling it. But more than that, what the entire purpose of this is to create value in our decision-making process and our educational process so that we get better results. And, you know, I'm appreciative of them coming back to us and giving us some of those questions so that we make sure that this process will yield information to us that will be appropriate for making those decisions. And so I think that that's a very critical aspect to look at, as well as the other aspects of this and time frame. And we all know what's happening with the budget and where the biggest bang for the buck is, and we want to make sure that, I mean, I'm all in favor of looking long term, because we can't be just looking at this quarter's results, but we have to make sure that whatever investment we're making, we really anticipate being able to get long term results and good decision making. We can't ensure the decision making, because we do that, but the information on which to make those decisions. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm very pleased that you brought this subject up. I'm pleased that we're not rushing it through, and that we get that forward going forward. And if we have to request design changes in how we get this so we get usable results, I'm very appreciative of the subject coming up and further discussion.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
There's several that signed up to testify today, and I know there has to be confusion as to what we're going to talk about, because HB 30 was on the roster, and it could be that those that signed up were interested in speaking on that. But I just want to make sure, if there's anybody in the room that would like to give testimony on the topics that have been talked about today, that I give you opportunity. If you would indicate, look at me. Otherwise, I don't want to ignore the people that signed up earlier, but I suspect that it had to do with the other one. Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, before we close out, I wanted to mention that there's an article in, just came out in, about Texas and Texas's waiver for continuation of their waiver is not being accepted. So unless they make changes, they will be back under No Child Left Behind with 100% of their schools failing starting in March. So the question of continuation of waivers is something that we need to look at here as well. And the biggest diversion there is, or the biggest question is, if you don't have a waiver or you're not meeting No Child Left Behind, then what happens is that there is a certain amount of the federal funds that has to be used in certain ways, which is a kind of a restriction from what we're able to do now. So as we go forward, I think that that's one thing that we've talked about a little bit, but we ought to keep that on our radar screen.
Representative Seaton, I also have read something on this. I'm not sure I have a complete understanding, so I hesitate to bring this up. But it's interesting. It has to do specifically with the questions that have been before us today. Texas, as I understand it, is kind of reacting to the mandatory testing element. And that's one that we're going to have to deal with. And I don't know the specifics and many details about Texas, but it is interesting watching them. And I think there's several other states that are beginning to take an interest in this too. So thanks for bringing that up. Representative Seaton?
Sure. And one of the other aspects, I mean, there's a number of aspects. But one of the big ones is the evaluation of teachers.
Right.
And whether you're using student performance data to evaluate teachers. So anyway, lots of good conversations for us here in this committee.
Yeah. One of the slim advantages for having the elephant in the room being the budget is that we get a chance maybe to look at this a little more closely than some of the policies. Our next meeting will be February 11th, and we will have two presentations, one of them being the school rating system that Alaska has, ASPI. And then a review of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, update on where we're at on that. Is there anything else that needs to come forward to committee? With not, gavel.